I'm Beatrice, your host of the Let's Talk Relationships podcast. Join me and my guests as we explore all things related to singleness, dating, and relationships. Together, we'll hear from real, everyday people and a few professionals and their experiences with self-growth, heartbreak, modern-day dating, and so much more. Thanks for tuning in. And if you're here for the long haul, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Relationships. Today, I'm so excited. I have one of my good friends, Janelle, on here with me. And she's a gem. She is someone I actually met. I was just in Austin not that long ago. And we were laughing that we've known each other for like 10 plus years now. We're like, what the heck? How? Like, time has just gone by so fast. But we've just been such great friends since. We kind of pop in and out of each other's lives, and it just works out well that way. But I brought Janelle on today because we always have such powerful, meaningful conversations around relationships, dating, all the things. And she's such a powerful woman and a powerhouse and someone that I truly admire. And so I wanted to speak to her. I wanted to kind of get her input on dating in Austin and just the struggles that we all kind of deal with in this lovely world of dating. So here we are. Hello, Janelle.
Hi. This is very exciting. Yes, when she was in Austin recently, which is where I live, we realized we've been friends for over a decade and didn't really know how we got to this place. But we're in a place where there's lots of truth, lots of lived experience, lots of championing each other and checking each other when necessary. And so I think that that's really evident when we talk through relationships and dating and being single and wanting to do that well.
Yes.
And wanting to want well for each other.
And I think that's so valuable. I feel like that's so rare in friendships because we do keep each other accountable and we do speak truth when it's necessary and in a loving way. But that's what I think I've always appreciated about you too, is like we've just had such honest and open conversations where we can be like, is that a you thing? You know, it's mm-hmm. not just like us complaining about something, but sometimes we have to kind of have the finger pointed at us in a very loving and gentle way.
Yes.
But that's why I value about us so much, because I think that that's so rare, especially because we're not really integrated into each other's lives on a daily. Like, we don't live in the same state. Mm-hmm. We don't, you know, spend that much time together. But I love that. And I so appreciate that because it's so rare.
Yeah, absolutely. I think good friends are the ones that hold mirrors up to you, to yourself, so that they see, you see what I see in you. And that's good stuff. And that's also stuff that needs to maybe get corrected. And I love that we have cultivated that kind of a friendship over the years and like across distances and lots of space sometimes. So it just makes for conversations like these really meaningful. And whenever we do get together and connect, even if it's been a while, I feel like there's lots of goodness that comes from it.
I love it. Well, I want to start off too. I want you to kind of, you know, you're just incredible. I know you've done so much work in your life over the years. And I think I've seen you grown so much over the last couple of years. I think you moving to Austin was so, so impactful for your growth. And it was really, yeah. really cool to watch. Mm-hmm. But you are a foster mom, which is incredible, a single foster mom. Mm-hmm. But you've got such a beautiful community around you that supports you and loves mm-hmm. you in it. But tell us a little bit about like kind of who you are and that little bit of you. I'd love for people to know that because I think it's so rare and beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. I think it still takes me by surprise whenever I have to say like, oh yeah, I'm a foster parent. Oh yeah, I'm a single mom whenever I do have a placement. So for clarification, I don't have any biological children, but I have become a foster parent within the last year and have helped participate in the reunification of two boys. So I've had two placements so far. And it's just one of those things that's been a calling on my life for over a decade. And yeah, I'm from Southern California, so grew up there, lived a little bit on the East Coast in New York when I was finishing up school, and moved to Austin during a funky time. But there's meaning I was here when the pandemic happened, and those timelines get really blurred. But ultimately, what I've been able to say about moving here, I've just come to really love Austin, and I've loved the community, and I feel really indebted to this city and indebted to the kids in care here, because it was here that I was able to kickstart one of my callings, which was to be a foster parent. And I do hope to foster children in a two-parent household one day, but that's just not my reality right now. And so being able to still do it as a single parent, but still in relationship with the community, in relationship with my church, in relationship with the system, as far as like child welfare goes. Those are all existing relationships that are really present when I'm fostering, and that's what make it possible to do it as a single parent. And I would argue that even when I am in a committed relationship and get to foster with a husband in the future, those relationships are still going to really matter. Like, I want to parent still within a village. I'd like for me and my husband to engage in the community in the same exact way, because I feel like it just really strengthens what we're doing. And I feel like naturally what happens when people become a family, I'm kind of just like not sold out on the idea of, oh my goodness, what do they call that phrase be when an
Not a NICMO.
no, but to clarify, that is a non-committal
Yeah.
makeout.
If you listen to my last episode, this is Janelle.
Yeah, that's me. No, what is that called? Not, I keep wanting to say a neutral family, but like, oh my
Nuclear
goodness.
family?
Nuclear, thank
Yeah.
you. Yes. I'm just not super sold out on the idea, because I feel like what happens when nuclear families exist is they start to kind of self-preserve and kind of turn inward.
Yeah.
And really, I feel like we exist within a larger community, and we're supposed to parent and be a family within that community. And I've been able to experience that as a single parent, because it was like an incredible necessity for me. And so, all that to say, relationships are just a big, big part of what I get to do as a foster parent, and I don't want those to not exist, even when I'm in a romantic, committed, like covenantal relationship.
No, I love that, because I was, it's funny, I was just listening to a podcast about, this is kind of going left field, but that's okay. A podcast about just the loneliness pandemic that we're having right now. Like, so many people are experiencing that, and I think that we've gone so far away from having like living within a village. Like, we don't live in villages anymore at all. And I grew up in that mentality. I grew up with the village. I'm Romanian, and like, you grew up with like hundreds of Romanians around all the time, and I'm so grateful for that. But like, it's so hard now because you don't have that. And I think that that's probably a topic for another time, but I think that impacts a lot of relationships. I think it impacts friendships. I think it impacts romantic relationships, families. Like, I have so many family friend like friends that are families that have kids that like can't get date night covered, can't get childcare, can't do, and it's like, how? It's just so crazy to me that, like, you know, yeah, that we've become this society. And I think that's so, it's been so beautiful to see through you and your community. Because I remember when you had your baby shower, your first like baby shower, to get all the stuff
My
you
foster
needed,
shower,
foster shower, yeah. And how many people came around you and supported you and got, you know, I think you have to go get like not certified, but like to babysit, do all, just to go through all that. And it was honestly really beautiful to see, and I thought it was incredible that like you had that community around you, because from in LA, that is very difficult and hard to find, and something I'm like seeking. And it's yeah, it's just interesting. It's cool. It's amazing that you had that. And I think that's such a God thing. He just had you covered in that, because he was like, this is what I have for your life. This is your will. And he provided everything you needed, because he
Yeah,
was like,
he
you're
sure
anointed
did.
to do that. So, love that. But in all that, I know that, like, I'm sure that that hasn't also made dating easy. Has it made it easier? I'd have to think. Because you're like, hi, yeah, I'm a foster parent, like, FYI, you know, so I'm sure that has made it even more difficult. So talk to me about your experience dating in Austin. How much
Well,
time do
let me
I
prep.
have?
No, I'm kidding.
What's crazy is that I feel no, it's funny because yes, how much time do we have? Slash, I feel like my experiences are really limited, mostly because any dating that kind of comes my way is short-lived. Short-lived probably for a number of reasons. But short-lived nonetheless. And so yes, candidly, I've been in Austin for almost 4 years and have stayed single those entire 4 years. I've had like a few brief excursions
Excursions, that's a new one.
Excursions, it's just what came. It's just what
Adventures.
came, mostly because they're kind of like adventures, kind of like crises, but
They're adventures that turn into crises.
somehow, let me tell
Somehow,
you, every
some
time.
way.
Every time. But yeah, it's been 4 years. I've been on the dating apps kind of intermittently. And really I have nothing against dating apps. I know a lot of successful couples that have come from Hinge and Bumble, and it's kind of those stories that have made me open to those apps. But ideally, I'd really prefer to meet somebody in person, to meet somebody who's within like my real time life. And so most of my dating situations have come from in real time life, because to be honest, I'll go on Hinge for like 4 days and they feel like the longest, most gruesome 4 days of my life. And so it hasn't been super successful. If we're gonna, I mean, I'm trying to redefine what success looks like when it comes to dating. But if we're going to simplify success with outcome as far as a relationship goes, or even a long-term healthy anything, it hasn't been super successful.
Why do you think that's so? I mean, not that's a
Girl.
simple question, that's a hard question, but I okay, partly I will say though, I feel like everyone's tired of dating apps. Like I'm gonna generalize, but I think even the people that are on it don't want to be on it. Like I think most people don't want to be on it because it's so impersonal. Like the people that I've met in person that I've like maybe had a great connection with, but yeah, maybe we find out, oh, we just don't align on stuff, and that's cool, we move on. Nothing bad, just like life didn't align. But they were great people. I'm like, I would have never swiped on you. I would have never picked you out in a crowd. But just because like the app says that's all you have to go after is like a couple prompts and some photos, and you're like, that's not much, you know? And so I don't know. It just feels like we're in an age right now where it's just, I don't know. It feels like people are just kind of over it. Like it's like people just want to meet people in person. But so I think that's part of why it's difficult now to find people on apps. Not to say it's impossible, that's not the, you know, but it's like, is it the most fruitful, you know?
Oh, I think that's a really good distinction to make. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so intermittent with it. Not because I just like don't need to be spending my time swiping, 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 and getting discouraged, getting discouraged, getting discouraged. And there's definitely something to say about attraction and how like I don't really love to talk like, oh, I'm like looking for vibes. I'm like looking for energy, because I really think that's all kind of like umbrellaed under attraction. And I feel that in person, and it's really hard for me to get a sense of that compatibility, that attraction over an app. And so like I have to take part of the blame for the apps not working, because I don't swipe right very often. And not because the men sometimes, but it's really just I'm like, I don't feel anything. And so it's really hard for me to kind of get over that initial like barrier, I guess. But why I think dating hasn't been super successful for me is a loaded question that I know that we'll kind of dive a little bit into the part of our friendship that goes, what part of it is yours? But before we get into that, something that you and I have talked about, and something that I've talked about with other women actually, is I just think there's this like phenomenon happening in the world. So I'm 33, I'm single, a single parent sometimes. And I think there's like a generation of us, like in our, you know, maybe early 30s to early 40s even. And we are part of a generation that has been empowered to do life on our own, like truly independently. And that has granted us this space to look back at our like history of relationships and go, you know what? I don't need to be in a relationship like my parents were in. I don't need to be in a relationship like my grandparents were in, because I can take care of myself. I can have a job that pays all of my bills. And it's just not this like super detrimental thing logistically to be single anymore. And so I think we're part of a generation of women that's really committed to help, like to wanting healthy relationships, and not settling. And then we're also a part of a generation that's really focused in on mental health and emotional health, and self-improvement, which I think has had some pros and cons, which every sort of movement is going to have. But I think we've just really committed to emotional health and like overall healing for ourselves. And, I think that has just raised the bar for dating and for what we want in a partner. And so, I mean, I am like a straight single woman, and so I don't want to speak for, you know, all 33-year-old women, because my experience has just been other men sort of my age. But I think because of those like cultural phenomenons, because of like the world we live in right now, it's just that the standard has been raised. And I want to preface this with being like, my intent here isn't to talk trash on like the men of the world, because I also feel like they've been raised in a very specific and limiting way. But generally speaking, I just don't feel like men are caught up to the emotional health and the overall healing and the work that relationships are now starting to require. And so, or at least those are the men that I've dated. I know good ones exist they and do. I know that they're out there, but I haven't had luck in finding a man that I'm attracted to who's willing to put in the work, who is wanting to talk emotion, wanting to talk healing, wanting to talk partnership. And so that's a no-go for me at that point. And so I think that's one of the bigger reasons why I'm still single. I think it's one of the bigger reasons. I know so many high quality single women, who we all have our things like that still exists, but they are overall high quality women who are struggling with the exact same thing. And so I think it's just this like cultural phenomenon where we're really waiting for our guys to catch up. And I say catch up mostly because, you know, I know that ultimately, like, that's what men are looking for too. Men are looking for connection. Yeah. Men are looking for intimacy. I just don't think that they've been given the tools to really seek that out sometimes, or when that gets really, really hard, I think that is really daunting for everyone. And I'm not entirely sure how often men have had to work through that in order to still sustain that intimacy and connection that they desire. But yeah, I'm just kind of waiting for hopefully my guy to catch up.
I mean, that's so real. I think you said it beautifully and perfectly, but I see the same thing. Like, I see the same thing in my group of friends in, and again, this is an equal offending, podcast, because I do have men on this podcast as well. And I've been hand selecting them because it's men that I admire, that I'm like, damn, this is a man who's done the work and who spent time. Right. And I think the commonality I've seen in the men that I've interviewed and spoken to thus far is they've spent time alone. So they've
that is so good.
They've spent intentional time single, and not just single and complacent, but they really spent time being like, wait, like, what do I want? Like, really asking themselves, what do I want out of life? What do I, and can I be that guy? Like, what, you know, I want a family. I want this. I want, maybe I want a career. Maybe I want that. But it's like, then they look at themselves where they're at and they're like, I'm not close to that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, what's required of me, you know? And I think a man has to get to the point where he's like, he faces himself and then wants to change. Because he will, I'm going to say this out loud for women, he will not change for you. Like, they will not change for you. It's just not going to, and it's what our dream is. And I understand why it's women will find men with potential and we get stuck in these potential relationships because of course we see it in them. That's what's so frustrating. Sure. You see a guy and you're like, I can see it. Like, you give me little beads of light that show me that you can be this man, but you're not. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to stick around and wait because I'm going to hope that you'll change for me. And I've been through that so many times and gone through that narrative. And it's like, they're not going to. And you don't want them to. You want them to change for them because that's what's going to, that's a lasting change. Yeah. You know, and I think I follow a lot of really great men on Instagram that really are focusing on like men's work. And you know, a lot of them also talk about like they just don't have good examples of men in their life that will guide them and lead them and show them like this is what manhood is. It's not toxic, it's not the things that you're seeing, you know, but it is vulnerability, it is these things, it's loving your family on a deep level, it's understanding emotions, it's you know, validating your partner's feelings. Doesn't mean you agree with it, but you can validate it. You can be create space for them. But men don't really know how to do that because I don't think they've ever begin. I don't think they have examples that show them that in a healthy way, you know? Yeah, and it's just been so sad to see because it's like I see it over and over and over. And it's like, and again, I'm not, you know, we're not trying to say, oh, it's all men's fault. It's all men's fault. But it's not that in any way. It's just really looking at it objectively, like, that's just the commonality we keep seeing. And we keep seeing, you know, and let's look at it even in our church. Like, we're going to take it there because it's like, because like, you know what, this is what actually gets me so irritated so many times when I go to different churches is like, they will have, how many women's Bible studies have you been to? How many do they have every season? They'll have women's Bible study in the fall and in the summer and women's this and women's groups and women's that. Tell me the last time you really see a lot of men's things. Some churches do well, but majority, you don't see it. You don't see men's groups. Yeah. You don't see men's Bible studies. You don't see the church really raising up men. And it's like, it's just sad to see. Like, I see that. It's like, wow, we've put so much in women. You know, women this, women that, women study. It's like, I'm sorry, but like, I'm preparing for someone who doesn't exist, apparently. Like, you know, but it's like, it's, I think it, you know. And I've actually talked to some people that are involved in the church, different, you know, and they said like a lot of churches don't want to go there because of people don't come, men won't come. I'm like, I don't care if it's like,
that's the issue.
I don't care if it's like 15 men that are, 5 men that are there, like 2, like, you know, like it doesn't matter. But I think that's what always gets me irritated. I'm like, ugh, like, I just don't think we do enough for them, you know, in just let, this is just the church. Imagine like the world, you know? And it's just, you know, Brian Reeves said this. He said, he's like, until men can be vulnerable with other men, they will always struggle being vulnerable with women. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's just, I feel like men need that space for themselves to grow and to really, you know, and to have, that's to have so, that vulnerability so with good. Others. So I think it's amazing what you said, because I think that it is a big problem. Like, it's not, it's not a bashing. It's not anything like that. But I feel like women are surpassing men at astronomical rates in the sense of like emotional maturity, of going to therapy, of healing, of all of that. They're also, they're also first to file for divorce. It's actually not men. It's actually women, you know?
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's the majority women. And, because they're the ones probably being like, hey, let's go to therapy. Let's go do this, you know? And they're kind of driving that.
It all kind of speaks to that. Sorry. Yeah. It all kind of speaks to that phenomenon. Like, exactly what you're saying. Like, oh, we are just no longer committed to unhealthy partnerships, mm-hmm. and we don't need to be anymore. And then I think about how you just talked about how the church offers so much, they pour out so much into women, and I'm really grateful for that. And yes. to be fair, women really drive the modern day, at least Western evangelical church. Actually, they've kind of driven the church in like since Acts. Let's be real. And so, like, I appreciate that, you know, the church will cater to, like, their, like, dominant demographic. But that's what I mean. I've been to literally hundreds of women's events and hundreds of Bible studies because that's what I want. It's what I'm seeking. Mm-hmm. And then it's a problem when you've asked about it and they're like, oh, but men just don't show up. And I'm like, that's the issue. Like, why mm-hmm. are you not showing up? Because I know that they want it. They need it. They're human beings who require that relationship too. And
they do.
I think
they
what you
it.
Said all the way back to not even having an example. I think like if the church is supposed to be an example to the world, like how we need to just like consistently put in the effort to exemplify what modern day respectable man and partner can be. Mm-hmm. Because I think men can get really intimidated by like the should be.
Yeah.
And this really is a matter of like, hey, this is what you can be. Like, this isn't like, mm-hmm. I need you to change an X, Y, and Z. Like, this is a beautiful healing invitation that's open to you too. And the minute that you're like bought in, the way it's going to transform your own self mm-hmm. and the way that you're seen by your partner or by your friends is going to be like, it's just like what you want. And so it's not a matter of like, oh, I think you should do this. It's like, oh, this can be done. And like, look what happens when you prioritize yourself and your emotional self in that way. But yeah.
Do you think also like going off of what you just said, like, do you also feel like, I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this.
Take your time.
I know, I'm like, I don't want to say, like, how do, like, because sometimes I feel like we're now setting the bar higher, right? And I think it is an age thing. I don't know, maybe it's not, but I do see it more in women in their 30s are requiring a little bit more, I'd say mm-hmm. a lot more, mm-hmm. of men, and they're requiring, I think they're just requiring more out of relationship. But it's like, yeah. but I'm also requiring the same out of my friendships. So it doesn't.
And of yourself.
And of myself.
And of yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not asking, you know, because I really had to do that work this year, realistically listing out, like, what am I looking for? What are the standards? What is that? And actually write it out. And I was like, yeah, I have to be able to, like, meet these standards myself. You know?
Absolutely.
And then they're realistic. And then it's like, then I can mm-hmm. ask of this from somebody else, consistency, emotional maturity, mm-hmm. you know, the ability to like understand what's going on internally and have a hard conversation, you know, be willing right. to have the right. hard conversation, want to resolve things, you know? Mm-hmm. But I also wonder
Absolutely.
If some men lack the motivation to want to grow, to do that because of just the plethora of availability out there that don't require that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's right. It's like, it's the slow go of movements. I can say like, this has been my experience, as someone in her 30s, who's talked to other likely like-minded women, high quality women in their 30s. And yet there are still women who are okay with the alternative, who are okay with things that I'm not okay with anymore. There was a guy I had met and I was gonna go on a date with, and to simplify what happened, he essentially bailed on our first date for the gym.
Oh.
And
I remember this.
you and I have talked
we
in detail
about this
particular situation, but I'm bringing this up right now in the middle of this conversation, because when I confronted him about it the next day, because I needed a minute to chill, and then I reached out to him the following day just to be like, hey, like, this made me feel like garbage, and this is why, and, you know, first impressions are really matter on the first date, and if this is the first impression, I'm just not sure this is something that feels safe enough to pursue. And the way in which he was shocked by what I was saying, mm-hmm. like, he genuinely could not see what had gone wrong.
Yeah.
And all that told me was that there are other women who would have been like, oh, that's fine, let me reschedule. That, oh, you know what, that's okay. Like, I'll wait for you until you're ready, or whatever the heck is. And so, yeah, I still think that there are, I still think, like, men who maybe are not motivated or don't see its importance or don't want to do the work, still can find relationships, and they do. And, I hope and pray that those are healthy relationships. They're just not people that I want to be in relationship with at that point.
But, yeah. I remember this guy, and I actually remember being like, are we sure we're mad at him? You know, so I think it is one of those situations where I think different people react to that differently, but it just shows that it's not someone you want to be with, you know?
Right. Right. Right.
So this leads me to more of the perfect segue.
Yeah, is it?
no, because I actually, this was one of those where it could be a bit challenging, because I think, okay, because I think that could go both ways. Like, could a first date be not as big of a deal? You're just meeting up. If he's late, or if he,
sure,
you know, not, let's say not if he's late, if he reschedules because something comes up more important, whatever. In my mind, like, he doesn't know you, you know? So it's kind of like,
right,
not a huge deal, but some people might take it as a big deal. But I also wonder, like, yeah, it's like, how do you approach that, you know? Because it is like, you know, are we blocking people too quickly? Mm-hmm. You know, are we like, no, he made one error at the beginning.
Right.
And, you know, and that's kind of a challenge. It's like, you know, and not to say this person was like meant for you by any means, but it was because
we later
got some interesting responses that made it more clear that we're like,
right,
no.
But this is what we talked about at the beginning, where I'm like, I told you about this situation, mm-hmm. and you said, okay, but what about this? Okay, what about this?
Yeah.
And it was really good for me to be like, okay, hear you there. And then I kind of went into a little bit more detail about the lack of communication, the lack of what felt like consideration. And so, you know, that situation is dead and done.
I know. After we went through the whole story, I was like, nope.
Yes, right. You're like, oh, okay. And so, but it still begs the question. I feel like every one of these situations begs the question, okay, what about it was on me? Like, what about it could have been my own stuff coming up, mm-hmm. That would keep me from moving forward with a potential partner?
Because I wonder, too, I think sometimes we can be, because we encounter that a lot, we can be very kind of hard, like upfront, like, sure, oh yeah, cool, whatever, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, oh you have the gym, okay, bye, and never talk to you again, you know. And in this case, mm-hmm. I'm using him as an example, but he didn't,
right,
like, because a stand-up guy would have been like, I hear you, I totally understand what you're saying, I didn't in the moment recognize that, like, let me make it up to you, are you available Friday 7, I'll make reservations, right, here, boom, saved it,
right,
you're moving on,
right.
But clearly not, that was not the situation with him. But I do wonder, mm-hmm. like, what are the things that, you know, but do block us from meeting someone great? Because, like, I, you know, I was talking to someone recently, and he was saying, he's like, I think a lot of, he said women, because that's what he, from his perspective, but this is everybody, like, don't fully process and heal from the previous relationship. And I don't mean you have to be like 100% healed, but fully process and understand, how did that relationship really impact me? And then we bring that into the next relationship. And if that mm-hmm. person does something somewhat similar to what this other person it did, now it's like a thing. Mm-hmm. Now it's become a big thing, you know? And it's mm-hmm. like, you know, are we blocking the right person from us because of our hard exterior, you know, because of, like, are we approachable? Are we, you know, do we give that off? Or are we more closed off because we're like, well, I'm looking for, you know, a higher standard, or I'm looking, you know, I wonder too, yeah. like, what do we, you know, give off? And does that impact who we attract and what we're mm-hmm. attracted to? Because that's been a big yeah. one as well. Like, I went through this book. I hate this book title every time I say it. Calling in the One. Calling in the One. It needs to be renamed. How to meet your – I think the subtitle is like, how to meet your life partner in 7 weeks. I'm like, oh, I'm going to throw
okay.
up. No, it's bad. It's okay. bad. I almost didn't do the book, but my friend was like, no, it's. I heard great things. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll do it. I did it, but uh-huh. it was really – probably life-changing for me, like one of the most impactful wow. books I did, because what it made you do is really look internally at yourself and really mm-hmm. understand what is it that I really, really want. Because sometimes I think what came out of that for me was I realized, like, I am actually quite terrified of finding yep. what I really want, like genuinely terrified. And I was like, I'm terrified I'm going to find it and then lose it. I'm terrified that I'm going to find it and I'm going to mess it up. I'm terrified I'm going to find it and not know what the hell to do with it. I'm going to, like, all mm-hmm. the things I learned are just going to go out the window when this person comes mm-hmm. into my life, you know? And it just really, it was very confronting. I was like, oh my God, I'm, like, actually terrified of this situation. I'm terrified of, like, losing my singleness. I'm like, all these things started coming up, because what she would make you do is she'd actually make you visualize, okay, you find the right person. What does it feel like? Give us, you know, talk out a scenario of you two together. Like, she'd literally make you, like, picture this person in your life. And it's scary. You're like, oh my God, I care about this person so much. And it actually becomes mm-hmm. like quite scary. And so part of me wondered, like, was I just accepting people a little less because it was less scary and it was more comfortable, because I knew it wasn't really going to go anywhere. So it was a little bit sure. easier to be like, oh, well, yeah, he's great. But, like, deep down, I'm like, but he's totally not it. But it was like, it was safer. It was like safer knowing that it wasn't going to go anywhere to be with that person, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what doing the work is.
Yeah.
And I truly think that has an impact on our own dating experiences, because I could 100% see how when that subconscious likely trauma response, so 100%. If we're going to, like, get mm-hmm. in the weeds, 100%. These are like these are trauma responses, whether for big T traumas or little T traumas. And that is a survival mechanism.
Yeah, it's a protection. It's protection point. For sure.
Absolutely. And so, but that's subconsciously just kind of like living mm-hmm. in your body and in your brain. And so when you don't confront it, yeah. when you don't befriend it, because, like, they're there for a reason. Mm-hmm. When you don't befriend it, then it absolutely drives your behavior in the dating world. And so I remember when we were in Austin, we talked about this, how you were kind of like, I think maybe I've gone for, like, unavailable men because I actually am terrified of the real thing.
Yeah.
And then you have to kind of sit with that. And girl, I have my own stuff yeah. too. So, I mean, like, if we're just out here getting vulnerable about trauma responses.
We are.
One of my blocks, because I have them. Like, yeah. I absolutely have them. Is I've just, like, recognized this, like, cognitive dissonance between what I want and then my behavior.
Mm. Dang.
And, like, okay, so I really, really worked on my singleness and worked to get to a place of contentment. So much so that it was a really big deal when I finally was like, wait, I think I want a relationship. Like, the desire in and of itself was, like, truly frightening to me. But as I've let that desire grow and as I've trusted that desire a little bit more, I'm in a place now where I'm like, okay, I think I want to find, like, a life partner. Like, I think I'd like to, yeah, find my person. And then I will see a cute homie across the way and completely turn my back and to him and, like, run the opposite direction. Like, I quite literally have a story where I ran away from a man that I was attracted to who, like, was essentially checking me out. And I have my own trauma responses that lit all the way up and drove me away from the thing that I desire.
Yeah.
Granted, we don't know if those people were going to be my person, but I just
it could
know
be one day.
Yeah, and I don't want my behavior getting in the way of exploring a potential or a possibility. And so I've had to reconcile with that. And that takes, in my life, that takes a lot of Jesus, a lot of therapy, and a lot of friends to hold me accountable to what I want, right? And like, you know, Jesus, therapy, and friends are all really gentle about it because they recognize these are trauma responses for, you know, layered reasons. But yeah, I have to reconcile with that and work to move through and with that.
Wow. Wow. That was, thank you for sharing that, because I know that that's not easy. It's not easy to look at yourself and to see like, oh, I'm part of the problem, you know,
because I'm a big part of the problem. And it's, absolutely.
It's honestly, that's been like the hardest thing the last couple of years was like looking at myself. I'm like, oh gosh, like I don't, oh, like you just get all like squirmy because you're like, I don't like that. Like, that's like I made those decisions or I acted a certain way or, you know, and because I had to do that too with like why I stayed in relationships that I knew were not right. I stayed in them for like a year or I would pine over the relationship that I was like, but I don't even want this relationship. Like, why am I pining for it? You know? And then also same thing. It's like, it was also a trauma response of, of just being used to my childhood. Like I was just used to that feeling. And so, and you know, what's crazy is I read a study too that 80% of our actions are actually driven by our subconscious.
So, that doesn't surprise me.
So like therapy, y'all, go to therapy. You know, it's, I mean, 80%, like we do things that we don't even recognize that we maybe not even voluntarily wanting to do, you know, and a lot of it comes from just how we were conditioned as kids, how we were conditioned growing up. And it's not to blame anyone, but it's like we had to adapt and we had to build these protection mechanisms and to get through life and to survive, because as kid, you know, when you're young, that's you're like, I need to survive. That's like your body doesn't know better than that, you know? And so you build these mechanisms to like survive. And unfortunately they come out in your adulthood and you start to see them, but until you confront them, you won't see them, but you'll live with the repercussions of them, you know?
Which goes back to what you said earlier when you talk to other men that you admire and how you've noticed a pattern of them being alone. Because when you're alone, you finally have this space, and intentionally, but like you finally have this space to confront those things. If you're going to keep fit, like those all exist in us. Like, and we don't need to have lived a super traumatic life. Like it's just a lived life with mistakes, and humanity is going to create in us like you said, involuntary behavior. And only when you're alone and intentional about confronting those things can you actually even see them for what they are. And so I think solitude is an important, I'm like big on the Enneagram, and one of they call it a transformational habit. Like they don't call it like the answer or the solution, but like a transformational habit, I think, to engage in is solitude, when you're really wanting to check yourself and particularly within this context. And then I think another transformational habit when it comes to designing a relationship is like practicing sacrifice.
That's a great one.
And I, you know, when you're like living in the current cultural phenomenon, I just am starting to see you have all these high quality single people. Like this isn't even like gendered at this point for me, but you have all these like high quality single people in their 30s who have done good work and who've essentially though cultivated their life towards themselves. They've cultivated a life of comfort. They've cultivated a life that is, there's like lots of equilibrium. And all I know is that good relationships are also incredible disruptions. And so if you're not practiced in disruption, then a relationship is going to blow up your entire world.
The whole word. Keep going.
Yeah. This, like, and like, I,
yes.
Yes. this is what, but this is what the Lord has been speaking to me. Like, yeah. This is truly what the Lord has been speaking to me, because I'm also like, you know, I'm trying to do the work on my end. I'm trying to be open and participate in like a dating world, and I haven't had success. And then whenever like I come back to discouragement, God's just like, okay, but run your race. And part of running my race involves sacrifice. Mm. And I think it's in prep for what a relationship is going to look like. Because at the end of the day, absolutely, we all want a thing. We all want this thing that's going to take from us.
Literally.
Like, I just don't think people know that relationships, the good ones, no, like the intimate powerhouse relationships, are all going to take from you. And like, that's like the simple
sort of. They require sacrifice. Like, they will all require sacrifice. Compromise, exactly, sacrifice, not getting your way, putting someone else's health
first,
mental, yes, all of it first.
Yes, come on. And so I'm not saying, right, it's not the answer. Like, I don't think like you start sacrificing and like there's your man. If that's the case, I just sacrificed my singleness to be a foster parent. And I mean, my man still ain't here. However, I just think practicing sacrifice can be such a daunting word. And so, like, you know, I'm not asking anybody to go out and like be a foster parent, but I think a lot of what you're called to and a lot of purpose requires sacrifice too. Mm-hmm. So it really just kind of integrates really wonderfully into just like your regular life. Or even you and I kind of texted this to you when we first started talking about having this conversation, where I'm 33 and I live with one of my very, very best friends. And it's just kind of worked out. She was like a built-in auntie when I was fostering. And friendships require a lot of work too. And though sacrifice can be maybe a daunting transformational habit, you can reframe it towards honor. And so I've really enjoyed living with somebody else in the middle of my singleness, because I feel really practiced in what does it look like to honor her, mm-hmm, even when I'm at 20%. Like, if I've had a hard day and I don't have much to give, but she comes home because she had an even harder day, what does it look like to sacrifice my own needs and honor her? Because she's my friend and because I love her. And I feel like that's a transformational habit that will continue, that gets to be a part of what it looks like to just run our own race and to live out our purposes. But it also, I think, will continue to help prep us in a really healthy way for the relationship that we want at the end of the day.
Dang, I feel like that's so good, because I'm not going to lie, I have literally, and I got to watch your guys' friendship too when I was visiting in Austin, and I love that, because you can see that, like, you know, mm-hmm, and it is true that we do get that ability to practice in friendship, in having, mm-hmm, the hard, absolutely, conversations, in, you know, I've had, mm-hmm, like, with my close friends, I have had to have hard conversations with each of them, because it's like something's bothering me, and instead of festering, I was like, hey, like, this is bothering me, let's just talk about it, like, let's talk about why, you know? But it's funny that you say the roommate thing, because I literally am not kidding you, the last couple months, I've lived alone for like, I think it's been 8 years now. It's been a long, right, time. And I actually recently figured out that through therapy that I live alone because of my own trauma issues. And it was, mm-hmm, a very much like a way for me to protect my space. And I was like, I lived alone and I could not even afford it. I was so desperate to live on my own. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding now that I really feel like I missed out on a lot of things with not having roommates and not having people, mm-hmm, to live with. And, mm-hmm, and I'm seeing that now. And at 33, I'm like, do I want roommates now? But I've literally prayed a lot about it. I'm like, God, do I like for actually that practice of like, mm-hmm, I don't have, mm-hmm, anyone in my space. I don't have to sacrifice my time, my space, anything really. Like, I'm fully, right, on my own. And I know that like having someone in my life, like, will disrupt all that, you know? And that's, yep, part of the, yep, like, I think that's also part of the fear and a little bit of the grieving that I think we forget that you're going to go through, even in the right relationship. Like, there's going, yes, to be a grieving process. And it just made me think of that. I'm like, oh man, I don't have enough of that practice, you know, of that. Yes. And I think it's yes. so true, because the best relationships, you are going to have to sacrifice. That is, I mean, the Bible even talks about that. Like, it's mm-hmm. a sacrificial kind of love, but it's right. what you want for someone else, because you expect that from them also, you know, it's like it's reciprocated. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
What's that one verse in John? It says, the greatest act of love is to lay down one's life. And I think so many of us read that and go like, yeah, Jesus died on the cross. Mm-hmm. Like, we get it. And like, but like laying down your life doesn't necessarily mean like I need to jump in front of a bus to save my kid. Mm-hmm. Like, it means when I'm sick and vomiting myself, I still am getting up and I am I'm trying to be the very best I can for my kid, even when I'm limited. Mm-hmm. And like his life just be like in those moments were before mine. And that's like a laying down of your life moment by moment, day by day in the right, you know, in the right relationships. Like don't need to, vulnerability is earned.
Absolutely.
Like these are things that should happen in safe relationships. But I do think that practicing sacrifice, practicing honor in your own relationships is going to keep you kind of like prepped and healthy for when that hopefully, you know, forever partner comes along.
Oh, I love that. Dang, I feel like we just, so many different topics could have been a whole podcast, but that was, I love that. I really, yeah, I think that's so key in, I think we have, it's like not only doing the internal work of ourselves, but also the work with others, I think is so pivotal as well. Uh-huh. It's not just about uh-huh. healing and doing that. That's great, but I think a lot of us stop there. And it's yes. like your healing, and I think about this a lot. It's like our healing, yes, it's for us, but it's also for others. It's so that we can show up better. It's so that we can be yes. better everything, better parents, better spouses, better friends, better neighbors, better all the things. Yep. It allows us to show up better in the world and to represent God and to represent like his life that he sacrificed for Jesus, you know? And it's like, I think that's part of the healing, you know? And it's not just yes. for us to enjoy. Oh, now I'm healed. Now I feel better. That's not what we're really called to do. It's really for others. And I also think that's a big reason why our divorce rate is also so high. I don't think people really recognize like what marriage really means and the sacrifice that is required in it because we live such singular lives, because we live such independent lives. I think that is actually making marriage even more difficult than it actually needs to be, is because we've conditioned ourselves so much to be single and singular and on our own independent. That I truly believe that's the reason why we're seeing so many failed relationships and marriages, because people don't understand what that means. Like, they don't really understand the depth of that and what is required of us in marriage. And I just think that's the detriment of relationships, you know? And it is sacrifice. It is, you know, and healing and all that is really just the beginning. It's because it's such a process. You don't heal once and you're good. It's a continual. Because, like, even in my journey now, I'm like, I've definitely healed in a lot of areas of my life, but I just recently started talking to someone new, and it's super early. So again, this is not anything, but even in that, it's so new. It's like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And I see my patterns come up already. Like I see them already. They're like right here. And I'm like, no, you know, but they're going to be there. Like, but I have tools now and I've healed enough that I'm like, okay, I recognize that's a pattern. My brain wants to go to XYZ. That's not the truth. That's not real. That's my brain making it up, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a continual thing you will have to do for a long time, you know? And that's a relationship too. It's continuous work. It's not, you know, you did it once and you had one hard conversation and you have to have it again. It's like, it's that continuous laying down your life. It's the continuous sacrifice. It's the continuous, you know, turning toward your partner, you know.
It's and to make it more complex, what did I hear once? It was something like relational wounds require relational healing.
Oof, yeah.
And so there are just some things that I actually cannot heal from on my own.
No, yeah.
You know, my first relationship that I want to like get right with in those scenarios is with the Lord, but like I can't heal a relational wound caused by a boyfriend as a single person. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think you can work on it. Like we talked about some of those transformational habits, but like relational wounds require relational healing. And mm-hmm. so like, that's just going, like you said, it's just like an ever evolving process that always, I'm always like conflict. I mean, I don't love it. It's not like my favorite thing, but it is always an opportunity for greater connection. And so like, I'm really just trying to find a partner who's like unafraid of greater connection mm-hmm. because hopefully, you know, working through relational wounds will get you relational healing and will get you greater connection.
Which is what we all want. At the end
it's what
the
we
day.
All want and need, you know, like scientifically, spiritually, it is truly like what we all need. And it's been proven over and over again. So,
I so appreciate you coming on here. I think we said a lot today. So no, I love it. And I truly appreciate your vulnerability. I appreciate your words and everything you've shared tonight. It's beautiful. And I hope people who are listening can, you know, you're not alone in this. Like, we're not alone in this. Right. We're all in this together.
Right.
And, I think focusing on your growth and practicing how you, I think it's the what I want people to take away is like practicing how you show up with others in friendship, at work, with your family, I think is what will prepare you for an amazing marriage. And I think you don't have to wait to get married or to meet that person to start that. I think you can start it with your friendships. Not. You can start it with the people that are around you, how you show up with strangers, all of that. Like, mm-hmm. really be mindful. Like, how am I showing up? And do I want to show up like this for my future partner, for my relationship, you know? And I think that's something you can start now. You don't have to be in a relationship to practice those things and to practice sacrifice and all that. So
And you'll start to notice the more you do that, the more fruitful your like current life in season is, right? So if you start investing in your friendships, start investing in, you know, your family, you'll end up being like, wow, I have thriving relationships mm-hmm. that leave me wanting less, mm-hmm. right? Like the desire for a husband for me is alive and present, but I'm not consumed by that desire because I've really invested in the relationships that exist in my life already, and they're fruitful and fun and healing. And so I just think the more that you do it, the more you're gonna find that you just like love your life already mm-hmm. and then your partner will just be an incredible addition to that, not like a feeling of a void.
Absolutely, that's truth right there. Thank you so much, Janelle. I appreciate you. I appreciate our friendship, and thanks for being part of my shenanigans of this podcast.
Oh my gosh, what an honor it is to be a part of this. I love championing women. I love championing people with good ideas and
I love it.
And modeling good dialogue and all those things. So I want to thank everyone for listening because we really went for it and said a lot. And I hope you hear my heart when it comes to this topic and all the ways in which I still require grace and growth. This has been fun.
Awesome. I love it. Thanks so much, girl. Appreciate it.
You're the best. Bye.
See you.